listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. According to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 42 million American adults, 42% of the population, live with anxiety disorders. Anxiety is one of the most common mental illnesses in the United States and also one of the least understood. The writer Kat Kinsman has said that she struggled with anxiety and depression her entire life. In her book, Hi Anxiety, Life with a Bad Case of Nerves, she gives an honest and tough account of how anxiety has influenced every stage of her life. The book is published by Day Street Books, and I'm very pleased. Like, I'm giddy. We've been talking this whole time. Very pleased it has brought Kat Kinsman to the show today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been having fun during the break, or we're going to continue the fun. Deciding to become so open about your anxiety must have made you a bit anxious?
It definitely is, though. You know, the people around me have been so kind and so lovely and really just sharing their own experiences with it. So when I started talking about it, it was via work when I used to work at CNN. And it was amazing how all throughout the organization, people were so supportive and wonderful. And for the first time in my life, I didn't feel alone.
Were you nervous, exposing yourself like that?
I am nervous 24 hours a day, pretty much. So it's just different levels of this. I will tell you that when I first started writing about mental illness, the first time that I really, really talked about it in a public way, I wrote an essay about depression. And I still remember how it felt when I hit send and sent it to my editor. I collapsed on the floor, but it was out of relief because I had been holding this as a secret my entire life, really. I mean, the closest people around me knew. But otherwise, when you're a mentally ill person, it takes so much energy to try to hide it from the world around you. And to finally have the cats out of the bag was almost a huge relief to finally be able to talk about it.
You know, when you say the words mental illness, mm-hmm. I mean, it just sends a lightning bolt mm-hmm. of fear through people that even if they do suffer from anxiety or anything that would fall under the umbrella term of mental illness, that they're afraid of telling anybody because folks might think they're crazy.
And that just compounds it. It makes it so much worse. It is exhausting to try to hide your anxiety or your depression, whatever it is, from people when really it's, you know, an illness like any other. It's either there isn't the same stigma around having a cold, having a virus, having any of these sorts of things. This is, I refer to it as an autoimmune disease of the soul. It's happening in front of all of us. And I think, you know, we as a society should be slightly mortified that we're letting people suffer in plain sight just because we're afraid of having an awkward conversation.
Mm. When did you first realize you were suffering from anxiety?
I was just a little kid. I remember being in kindergarten, and I was being called to read in front of a group. And I actually felt okay about reading, but I knew that I was a little bit nervous about the public performance of it. I knew I actually read pretty smoothly, and I was afraid that it was going to make me stand out. And I was just picking at a sore on my leg until the blood ran down onto my sock. And the other kids noticed what was happening. They noticed my hands shaking and that I was starting to bleed a little bit. And I was called out for it because they could see the physical manifestation of it, which just led me to try to hide it.
And kids are cruel.
Kids, it's amazing since I've really become, I refer to this as a coming out process when I really revealed this to the world. So many of the people who I was afraid of telling this to, of exposing myself in front of, have since as adults come to me and said, oh my God, I was going through something similar myself. I wish I had known. I wish all of us had known. I wish all of us could just be having this conversation without any shame.
I'm speaking with Kat Kinsman about her new book, High Anxiety, Life with a Bad Case of Nerves. So we're talking about how the kids in the classroom reacted to you when you had to do this sort of public speaking thing in class. How did your family deal with your anxiety?
They have been tremendous about it. I mean, mental health has always been a pretty, I wanted to say almost a pretty open conversation in my family, but it really came to the forefront when I went into a major depression when I was about 13 years old and being bullied very badly by my best friend at the time. And the doctors were looking for all sorts of explanations as to why I was not able to function so much anymore. I was sleeping constantly. I couldn't go to school. They thought mono. They thought maybe I had cancer. And there was really a point of worry there. And finally, they realized there was nothing physically wrong with me. And then as a family, we had to confront what was actually going on. And it started a conversation in my family. You know, my mother suffered from a lot of these things, throughout her whole life. My sister's a therapist. So I consider myself incredibly lucky that I have been able to talk about it really openly from an early age. I realize that's incredibly rare. I realize all of this privilege that I have. You know, I'm a straight, white, cisgendered woman who can have access to healthcare. I have all of these things, and I realize not a lot of people have those. So I figured if I'm going to take, who else can take the hit like this?
Mm-hmm. You and I think your mom came up with mm-hmm. a word to describe how you felt.
Yeah, this word is gricky. It's sort of a portmanteau of gray and icky, because I didn't really have the language to talk about depression. You know, that's a heavy word when you're young. I mean, I think we had come up with it when I was about in fifth or sixth grade, and I was being bullied at that point too, and I stopped wanting to go to school, and of course they were thinking mono. She saw something else was afoot because she'd been dealing with some of these issues her whole life too, and her mother before her. She gave me the language to talk about it, and that saved me. That absolutely saved my life.
How often do you suffer from panic attacks?
Daily, pretty much. I have a panic disorder on top of, and I know not everybody has that, but at some point every day, leaving the house is really a challenge for me. So I'll be putting on my makeup in the morning, and I'll be going to my job that I absolutely love, that is filled with, delightful, bright, beautiful souls who I can have an open conversation with. But there's something about leaving the house that's a particular trigger for me. Other people have their other things too, but getting on public transportation, it might just be a random one that comes in the middle of the night, but there is some degree of panic attack every single day of my life.
And you know, I had a panic attack a few years ago on the train. I had no idea what happened. I was on the train from Washington to New York, and that first long stretch, the Baltimore to Wilmington stretch, boom. I had no idea what was going on. I thought I was having a heart attack. Is that how panic attacks manifest themselves for you, or is it something do they manifest themselves differently in different people?
They're vastly different. It really is per person. There are the ones that people talk about where they feel like they're going to die. That is the thing that, I had several different friends, especially post-election, end up in the hospital, in the emergency room, because they thought they were going to die. They couldn't breathe. They had palpitations. So that is one manifestation. I've gone through points in my life where it's been gastric. My stomach hurts. It's boiling. It's acidic. It's awful. You know, I feel like I'm, something is going to come out some end.
like a scene out of Bridesmaids.
Right.
We just don't know.
Pretty much. And for some people, that actually causes the thought of that actually causes a panic attack. For me, the way it's manifested in the last few years, I have a lot of muscle spasms in my back. They go up my neck. I grind my jaw. I'm in a constant state of pain with that. Or I pick at my thumb when I really start to feel the heart palpitations. I'll start to pick at my thumb until it bleeds. I'll wake up in the middle of the night with a pounding heart. For different people, it's different things. Some people might stutter. Some people might, feel sick to their stomach. Some people might feel like they might faint. It's really a whole new bag of tricks each time.
Do you medicate? Are any pharmaceuticals involved in trying to control or temper this?
Yeah, that's something also that is really personal to the person. I am not currently on any medication, and that is just a personal choice because I had an incredibly bad reaction to the one that I took for a very long time, and the withdrawal from it was a year of absolute hell. So for other people, it has saved their lives, and I would never discourage anybody from going on anything. So my doctor and I, she introduced me to a thing that I consider to be an absolute lifesaver. It's called L-theanine, and it is an enzyme derived from tea leaves. And some people call it natural Xanax, but I don't even care if it's a placebo. I pop one, and I'll be having a panic attack. And I always say it doesn't solve it. It sands down the jagged edges of it. I also do a lot of really conscious breathing. I had a therapist for a long time who said to take three deep breaths in and out. So whenever I do public speaking, I actually get the audience to do that with me.
Oh.
And there's something really powerful in that.
I've got to ask you, because you part of your book is dedicated to your dating life.
Yes.
With this mental illness, talk about it, and then I want to talk about Douglas.
Oh, he is the light of my life. You know, it's funny, depending on the person, the relationship with mental illness was different, because in some relationships, I was the person who was really bolstering the person who had more manifestations of mental illness, some who were admitting to it and some who weren't. Some, I really felt like I had to hide who I was. Mm. There is a lot of what I call tap dance and sparkle when you are mentally ill, where you feel like you have to be this bright and shiny version of yourself to make up for the fact that you're this scared, frightened person. And I felt myself overcompensating a lot because I didn't want to be a drag and a burden on somebody and make them think, oh my God, if I really commit to this person, then I'm going to be saddled with this broken wreck of a human being for the rest of my life. Mm. And some of them, you know, one person wanted to really be a caretaker of me. One of them exploited the fact that I had all of these anxieties. And, you know, it manifested differently, but I just tried to be as honest as humanly possible.
And so in appears Douglas.
Yes.
And Douglas, who is now your husband, but was it on your first date you brought him to your dominatrix show?
Yes, indeed. So part of my dealing with my anxiety for a while after a really horrifying breakup was I became a professional dominatrix, which, you know, I'm not saying everybody needs to go out and do that, but it allows you to take control in a really surprising way. It let me not be myself for a while because I would go into character as this creature, Mistress Jerry, who really could... I always thought of it as I was a therapist for people who didn't want to necessarily bring this to a traditional therapist. So I, on New Year's Day of the year that I met him, I put an ad online. He answered it, oh my gosh, like 12 years ago today?
Wait, you, oh, 12 years ago today you
he
put that ad
He responded to my personal ad.
And your personal ad as you, or
yes,
as Mistress Cherry?
As me, but I had a couple of pictures of me as Mistress Cherry. He's like, oh, well, these are kind of neat. You couldn't exactly tell what was going on, but he's like, well, where is this red room? And I said, well, if you can't deal with this thing about me, then you just, I can't, you know, just deal with it. I was trying to be a tough girl. And I double dog dared him and said, come out to this party where the other women who I worked with and I, we are the entertainment. You know, if you wear fetish gear, you can get in for $5. If you don't, it's $10. He's like, I got this. Don't worry about it. And I walked in and there he was. And I had a guy on a leash, like a stockbroker on a leash with fairy wings. And I walked up to Douglas and he whispered into my ear, sort of an inside joke that we'd had in email, drop the guy's leash and fell in love in that second.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So Douglas shows up at this party decked out
leather in pants, beautiful leather pants.
And that was it. It was
on
love at first sight.
The air exploded. It was and he's not a fetishist person. He's just as a sharp and snappy dresser. He's like, wears suits by day, super dapper, but, you know, goth boy. And so he had the pants ready to go. And the air changed when he leaned in and whispered into my ear. And, you know, I just made it my business to, I knew there was something there and I knew, okay, I might as well get my heart broken up front. So I'm going to tell him what the deal is.
So then it sounds, how important then has Douglas been to helping you with your anxiety, with your mental illness? Sounds like he's super important.
He is really, I tell him every single day that he is my favorite person in the history of time. I mean, we have a shorthand, hey favorite. And it's a really lovely thing because he's never made me feel like I have to be anything other than what I am. And he hadn't really had anybody in his life address it so head on. And I gave him every out from the get-go, as you know, early on, here's what's going on with me. I was on medication at the time and I said, here's the medication, here's how my mother is ill, here's all of this stuff. It didn't seem to scare him off. And you know, and I think throughout the course of our relationship too, I've been able to help him maybe identify some things, you know, in his life, you know, some anxieties, some, you know, tendencies. And we really just work toward having this really open communication. I mean, I realize I hit the jackpot with this man because, you know, he'd also been to therapy too, but he never made me feel like I needed to be anything other than what I was. And it wasn't a deal breaker for love.
What do you hope people will get from your book?
God, I want people to be able to realize that they deserve care, the no matter where they're coming from, what their culture, their family, their race, their religion tells them, that they are entitled to care and that they're not alone and that it's nothing to be ashamed of. And they are worthy of love.
I've been speaking with the writer Kat Kinsman. She is the senior food and drinks editor at the site Extra Crispy. And her new memoir is High Anxiety, Life with a Case of Bad Nerves. It's been wonderful to meet you,
Kat. Thank you so much for having me.